The Supreme Court closed its 2002-2003 session this past week with a string of decisions that almost sounded as if the court was dominated by liberals. The justices decided that affirmative action, with certain parameters, is constitutional. They ruled that a law prohibiting gay sex is unconstitutional. And they held that defense attorneys have to give good representation to defendants facing the death penalty. It is, of course, more complicated than those brief phrases. Weekend Edition legal advisor Mimi Wesson is here to explain where the court is coming from and where it might be heading. Hello, Mimi.
Morning, Leanne.
Were those really liberal tendencies coming from the court?
Yeah, they were, and it was surprising not only the way some of those cases came out, but who wrote the opinions for the court. In one case, Justice O'Connor. In the gay rights case, Justice Kennedy. In a federalism case, Chief Justice Rehnquist. All persons not ordinarily associated with the positions they took in those cases.
Now, the biggest case in terms of public attention was probably the affirmative action case. How broad, really, is the meaning of the decision in this case?
In my mind, it's not in the same class as desegregation of public education, the subject of the important case 50 years ago, Brown versus Board of Education. More symbolic to me, like the flag-burning cases, but still important and something that everyone was watching.
But not, it doesn't really apply to all of society, more to these institutions.
Yeah, it only applies to institutions where seats at these educational institutions are in high demand. There are many, many more applicants than there are persons who can be admitted, and that doesn't account for very much of the educational institutions in this country.
Gay rights got a great deal of attention when the court struck down a Texas anti-sodomy law, but are the implications bigger?
Well, depends on whether you believe what the dissenters said about the case. And that's always hazardous because sometimes the dissenters make the majority's opinion sound more sweeping than it really was. The court only held that it cannot be made a crime for persons to engage in gay sex if the same conduct would be lawful if engaged in by a heterosexual couple. But the dissenters say that there's no stopping the court's reasoning here and that in later cases there would be no reason not to also strike down laws prohibiting gay marriage, gay adoption, or any form of gay equality that's sought.
You know, much of what comes from the court really isn't very clear-cut. Some of it's awfully arcane. There was a decision that seems rather arcane, and I hope you can explain it to us. It was two cases, and it had to do with proportionality and due process. Can you explain what that was about?
Well, people can be punished by states in a couple of different settings. They can be convicted of crimes, and their punishment can be a sentence of imprisonment. They can be sued in civil court, required to pay damages to the victim of their wrongdoing, and then they can be required to pay damages beyond what would compensate their victim, so-called punitive damages. So the question that the court had to face in two different cases was whether the due process clause requires the court to intervene when there's some severe disproportion between the magnitude of the wrongdoing and the magnitude of the punishment that's imposed. In a criminal case that involved the California Three Strikes Law, the court narrowly upheld a law that imposed a life in prison term on a man who had been convicted of a third crime, even though the third crime was a rather minor one, shoplifting three golf clubs. But then the court, in a civil context where the wrongdoer was a corporation, struck down a punitive damage award that was $145 million compared to only $1 million necessary to compensate the victims of the corporation's wrongdoing. The justices divided in a lot of interesting ways in those two cases, but some observers comparing the two outcomes have said that the court as a whole seems to be more concerned with injustice to wealthy corporations than to feckless individuals.
You like to track the court's decisions on how they reflect trends or tendencies toward or away from federalism, cases that involve states' rights usually. What did you see in the decisions this session?
A very surprising decision, right in the last week of the term, written by Chief Justice Rehnquist, who has been a fairly sturdy proponent of the project of federalism. As you said, in part that has to do with trying to enlarge the various states' immunity to regulation by federal law passed by Congress. In this case, the question was whether the state of Nevada had to respect the right of one of its employees to take leave guaranteed by the Federal Family and Medical Leave Act. A court found they hadn't respected the employee's right and granted damages. The state argued before the court that, as a state, it should not be required to pay damages for violating this federal law because it should enjoy some immunity. But a majority of the court, as I said, led by Chief Justice Rehnquist, held that that was wrong and that the state could be required to pay damages. This was surprising because in recent terms, the court had struck down damage awards against states under the American with Disabilities Act and the Age Discrimination and Employment Act. So this was at least a pause, if not a reversal, in the march of the court's federalism cases, and very surprising that the Chief Justice wrote it.
Finally, no retirements were announced at the end of this term, but there could be retirements very soon. Then President Bush would have the opportunity to shape the court for future decades. What do you expect here?
Well, don't know what to expect about retirements. The rumors are, of course, flying, and they chiefly have to do with Chief Justice Rehnquist and Justice O'Connor. President Bush has said if he has a chance to appoint someone to the court, he would like to appoint a justice along the lines of Justices Scalia and Thomas. So I think we can safely predict that if President Bush has his wish, and if Justice O'Connor is the one who announces a retirement, it's very likely that if his choice is confirmed, it will produce different outcomes in many important, closely contested cases like these we've been talking about.
Mimi Wesson teaches at the Colorado School of Law in Boulder. She's also the author of the mystery novels A Suggestion of Death and Render Up the Body. Mimi, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Leah.